at 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The Fort Worth superintendent spent the day promoting two bond packages that voters will consider next month. On the ballot, a $750 million bond proposal, as well as something called a two-penny swap. That would add another $23 million to the district's bank account. Kent Scribner says neither bond package would change the property tax rate. The superintendent spoke to the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce members this afternoon, and he said some schools are bursting at the seams.
We have a few schools that are very, very overcrowded. Tanglewood is one of those. A school that's built for 600 students currently has 870 schools enrolled. If the bond does not pass and we make no other alterations, there'll be 1,100 students in Tanglewood, which is built for 600.
Scribner said the lion's share of the $750 million package would be used to upgrade and modernize buildings and instruction materials. The superintendent also pushed Fort Worth's literacy program called 100 by 25. The goal? To get 100% of third graders to read at grade level by the year 2025. Not too long ago, Scribner said not even 30% could read at grade level.
Here we see that 2 years ago we were at 29%. We're on our way, 34%. We've leapfrogged San Antonio and Dallas, on our way to the 40s next year and beyond.
Scribner told the audience he couldn't tell them how to vote. That violates state law. But he did say Election Day is November 7th and early voting starts October 23rd. Now to think and addiction. When most of us think of addiction, we think of nicotine, alcohol, and drugs. Endocrinologist Robert Lustig, though, thinks we should add another staple to that list, sugar. That and think he talked with Chris Boyd about how Americans got so hooked on sugar in the first place.
The sugar is what the food industry adds to make you buy it. Because when they took the fat out of the food, it tasted like cardboard. Turns out sugar is way more dangerous than fat ever was, but it was squelched by the food industry back in the 1960s. So we have been living a nutritional lie for the past 40 years. And we have not only the data, but we have the paper trail to demonstrate it. It is tobacco all over again. Real food is low sugar, high fiber. So you don't make the liver fat, you don't get the metabolic syndrome, and the fiber reduces the rate of absorption and lets your bacteria eat what you ate instead of you putting it in your fat cells. So we can turn the obesity crisis around if we moved to real food. The problem is that's not what the food companies are selling.
Robert Lustig is the author of The Hacking of the American Mind, a science behind the corporate takeover of our bodies and brains. This episode of Think Rares tonight at 9, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. Florence Shapiro is best known for her long career as a Texas senator. After leaving the legislature in 2013, she became chairman of the board of the Dallas Holocaust and Human Rights Museum. The new museum broke ground Tuesday, just blocks from the original Holocaust Museum. In our weekly State of the Arts conversation, Ann Bothwell, KEI's vice president of arts, sat down with Shapiro to discuss her deeply personal connection to the project.
Florence Shapiro, welcome to KERA.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate that.
Your parents were both Holocaust survivors. Can you share a little bit of their story?
My father and my mother were both born in Berlin, Germany, 1920, 1922. My father was sent out in 1939 on a kinder transport, which was for children. They had to be going to England or to Scotland, and they had to have someone that would welcome them into their homes. My grandfather had a distant cousin who said, yes, he can come. My father's mother, father, and his sister were all killed in concentration camps, and probably about 37 members of his immediate family. My mother was kept in different places around the countryside. People would hold them, keep them in their homes. They would live out in the forest. The Nazis picked up my grandfather on several occasions and beat him to a pulp. And they paid a lot of money periodically to try to get out, to get passports. Finally, in 1939, they actually got passports to leave to go to England. Her father passed away 6 months later from the beatings and other things. The caveat to this is that my sweet mother will be 95 next month.
So what impact did their history have on you when you were growing up?
Well, it was an interesting time growing up because I knew my parents were different, but I really didn't understand what that meant. My father would speak to us about it, but he only spoke to us at very significant times during the year, during the high holidays, or during the times when he became a little melancholy in remembering what had happened to him. Many years ago, when Steven Spielberg first started doing the Shoah, which is where he goes, he, not personally, but his association, goes around the United States and interview Holocaust survivors, both my mother and my father were interviewed. So it opened up some opportunity for me to hear their story as they told it to a third person rather than to their own family and their own children.
Your father was involved in creating the Holocaust Museum.
He was. And I really remember those times. There were a group of gentlemen who were all Holocaust survivors who were friends. And they believed that it was part of their memory to be able to build a museum to really tell the story of the Holocaust, to be able to move beyond what had happened and share some of these stories. And they also wanted to be able to memorialize their loved ones who had died.
How did you talk to your kids when they were growing up?
I let my parents tell them as much as they wanted to. I was never going to intervene in that. But after they finished, if they had questions or if they wanted to know more, I told them as much as I knew. And they would start studying it in school and they would hear about it and they needed to know. Why do I not have any grandparents, my children? Why do I have no aunts and uncles? And I always found when I was growing up, it's a silly thing, but I really envied a lot of my friends who had, you know, inherited things, teacups and plates and a spoon set. I mean, little things that you don't realize when you come to America like they did, they came with nothing. So their heritage was only what they spoke about.
The museum's expected to open in 2019.
It is.
How do you think you're going to feel when you first walk through those doors?
Well, Tuesday was very emotional for me. I tried really hard not to show it, but it was very difficult. I believe I was put on this earth to be a bridge. That's the hardest part, I think. To be the link between my parents and their heritage and their history, and my children and grandchildren and their future. And I take that responsibility very seriously. And I believe this museum is an outgrowth of that activity for many of us. You can have a history museum. Everybody has history museums. But to make it capable of changing behavior today, that's what we dream that this museum will do.
Florence Shapiro, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me to be here. Thank you for caring about this project that we think is a dream come true.
And finally, a programming note. On Sunday night, KERA-TV will air a documentary that explores the life and career of a pioneer in North Texas journalism, Vivian Castleberry. She died last week at age 95. Texas trailblazer Vivian Castleberry airs at 6 Sunday night on KERA-TV. We have a story about her life at KERANews.org. And finally, this evening, mostly clear skies, low around 71. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high near 94. It's tomorrow night that things start looking cloudy. A 40% chance for storms with a low around 63. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.